All right. Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening to Through the Garden, or watching if you're on the YouTube. Let's see. Today is Pi Day. Happy Pi Day, boys. March 14th. Happy
Pi Day. I just had some pie.
Ooh, what kind?
Cherry. Good old classic American cherry. It's like
can't
that.
Go wrong.
Yeah, and that and apple are like the staples of American pie, so you got to like it.
Oh, yeah. Can't go wrong. Mm-hmm.
No, you can't go wrong with it. Well, congratulations on that. I have not had pie today. I did order Chinese food.
Good stuff.
How about that?
Good stuff.
How about that? All right. So that segment's over. We have plenty to talk about. You guys are going to talk about the Bears because I've retired. Cubs, Sox, Bulls, Hawks. Everybody's done something kind of important with themselves this week. So we have plenty of things to talk about. And I'm excited for our YouTube page. Look at us looking at each other.
Yeah,
people can see us. People can see us looking at each other. So if you're listening to the podcast version of this, we are on YouTube now. So you can watch it on the YouTubes if you'd like to. We're also broadcasting on Twitter and Facebook. So hopefully people will pop in the comments. And if you don't this week, then we'll count on seeing you next week. So, yeah. So let's get into it. Bears. Bears, boys. Bears. Lots of stuff happening in Bears Town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but not the major thing.
Not the major thing. I'm just going to point out that, you know, ever since Justin Fields said that he would take LeBron over Michael, his trade stock has gone down a little bit. I'm just saying.
So that's what it is. That, okay.
Not the $30 million 50-year option that would be attached to any team trading for him. Yeah. It's the LeBron vs. MJ debate.
Right, yeah. Well, Mr. Bear Goggles on, you usually take the reins when it comes to the Bear stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this whole offseason, I've maintained follow the simplest solution. If you look at Ryan Poles' background, he always wants to make sure that he's comfortable with the medical and he's comfortable with the person. Next week is when he can check both of those boxes off for Caleb Williams. When he has his pro day, he'll probably be at Hallis Hall in the days after that. Assuming there's no more roller coaster aspect to this, those are probably the final two boxes to be checked. And then he'll probably prioritize a trade of Justin Fields. You can debate whether or not that was a right move, considering Fields' trade value has shrunk to just about nothing now. But I think at the end of the day, that's truly what the delay is Poles just wanting to check every box with Williams.
Well, you know, it kind of follows what he does and the way he's approached things. And, you know, I'll never forget when Ryan Poles had his first offseason. Remember the Larry Ogunjobi thing that right. It looked like a great signing and then it fell through with the medicals. And, you know, that was clearly tough for Ryan Poles. I think I read somewhere he actually like called and apologized to Larry Ogunjobi.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of the guy he is. But I mean, there is this reality that the Fields market is pretty small right now, and we've seen other teams jump at these quarterbacks. I think we also all knew that a lot of this quarterback controversy was going to hinge on Kirk Cousins and the controversy of where Justin Fields fits best. Well, we've talked about the Falcons for a long time. Well, guess what? They have Kirk Cousins now. And then you saw Baker Mayfield. He's going back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. No surprise. Russell Wilson going to the Steelers. You know, that was an interesting move. But you look at everything else and you say, okay, where are there still possibly openings? I said the Seahawks were a dark horse, but they just traded for Sam Howell. I would not be surprised if we see like Denver go after somebody like Fields. They don't have anybody right now. And could New York, could the Giants? I think they're a dark horse too. So I think the market is very small. I just don't think it's gone. Are we going to be looking at great compensation? I'm a little skeptical on that. But I think if the plan truly is Caleb Williams, right now you're just trying to get any value you can for Justin Fields rather than just flat out cutting him. Again, if he is indeed the play here. But I think that's kind of where they're leaning.
Yeah, it's crazy because look at all these quarterbacks people are choosing over Justin Fields. Sam Howell, Gardner Minshew, like all these guys. Joe Flacco goes to Indianapolis. Mac Jones is going to be the backup in Jacksonville, which, by the way, New England is my dark horse. I still think that they would take Justin Fields and take Marvin Harrison Jr. at 3 in the draft.
I could see, I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, but New York.
Yeah, especially because.
Sorry, go ahead, Jordan.
Oh, no, so especially because New England, they put a big pursuit in Calvin Ridley and missed on him. So they're still looking for that wide receiver to add. So, yeah, that could definitely be an
option. And New England seems like the place that Justin would go to, and then he would just thrive there, just for whatever reason. Yeah. Just thrive. You'd have Marvin Harrison Jr., went to the same college. Like, it's just all the stars are would align over there. But yeah, the Giants, they're probably the public favorite, I would assume, to land him. But that's me. I don't talk about Bears
anymore. Honestly, especially today, there's been a shift. A lot of people are pointing towards the Eagles being the team to watch. They just lost Gardner to Vegas. They think that Fields could potentially go there, back up Jalen Hurts, and then potentially be in a position to cash in next offseason as a free agent.
Yes. Yeah. K-Fids is driving in. And we will get to the Cubs stuff, K-Fids. Don't worry. Don't worry. Go ahead, Alex.
It's much more brighter when we get to the Cubs stuff. You know, I was just one of the things I was going to point out too was people sometimes bring up the Commanders. I think they're just going out and drafting somebody. I don't see the Commanders making a trade. Yeah. I think they want to keep as many, you know, draft picks as possible. So, you know, again, anything can happen, but I'm not really looking at the Commanders as one of the stronger possibilities. And I also feel like, I think Las Vegas, you know, they seemed like a favorite for a while, and then they really dipped when they got Gardner Minshew. I think their chances are small for a Fields play as well, but I don't think it's zero. I mean, because there's a tiny sliver there. It's the Raiders. You never know.
But also, I thought things went so south with Luke Getsy and Justin Fields. Like, why would Luke Getsy, like, it seems like Getsy was blaming on Fields not being able to throw the ball down the field. So that way, that's why he had to do screens. And Justin Fields was at one point talking about coaching, holding him back. Like, why would they fit well with each other again? That's just crazy.
Well, here's the thing. As is the case with this Caleb Williams versus Justin Fields debate, Bears fans are kind of projecting their opinions as facts in the situation. Luke Getsy and Justin Fields actually really like each other and actually have a good working relationship. It's just because of how bad things went that fans just immediately thought, oh, well, these two can't work together.
Yeah.
And I think with the Fields coaching comment, I think that was more so like a broader sense of what's going on with the team than it was a direct shot at Getsy.
Sure.
Having said all that, having defended the relationship, I still just don't think Vegas is too much of an option, especially after the money they gave Minshew. They'll be in a position to potentially grab one of the three quarterbacks at the bottom of the first round, whether it's Penix, whether it's Bo Nix, whether it's J.J. McCarthy. I don't think Fields is a realistic option there.
Yeah. So, like you said, when the pro rave happens, I'm sure after they get for sure with Caleb Williams, then everything's going to fall into place and somebody's going to take him. Of course, we're not going to get the first round pick that we were talking about with the Steelers.
No,
but, that was never realistic.
That was crazy. That was nuts.
That was nuts. And also, I think another thing to keep in mind, too, is people will look to the big reporters like Ian Rappaport or Adam Schefter for information on what Justin Fields' future is going to be, who's been talking to who. But, you know, I will say this about Ryan Poles. I think he's a very smart guy, and I don't think he's going to go out and show any of his cards. So everything that the reporters could know is they haven't done anything, but Ryan Poles has not shown his cards at all. So I think that you're just, until it happens, you're not going to get any real clues. I think that having a sense that Caleb Williams is going to be their guy is a good sense to have, but you know, it's not like he came out and flat out said it, nor is he going to go show his card saying, oh, hey, guess what? Justin Fields is going here, because they've been talking to this guy, this guy, that, you know, it's just, you're not going to get much information.
Right. Yeah. It's just, yeah. And the less information that the city of Chicago gets, the more they're just going to make up on their own to talk about stuff.
So. And people will mistake that as fact. People will take speculation from the media and take it as fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been insane. This past week, we've had everyone from Antonio Brown to a Bears blogger say what the Bears are going to do at the quarterback position. And if you're a fan of Justin Fields, you take that reporting and you treat it like it's church. If you're a fan of Caleb Williams, someone says the Bears are going to take Caleb Williams. You take that reporting, you take it as church. But to Alex's point, no one knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So there's no need to get up and down about every little thing that comes out.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why I put out a Twitter video the other day where I was like, I'll deal with it in August. Like I got a Cubs team to worry about, but we should talk about the free agents. I did spoil it a little bit on the stream here because I'm playing with buttons. Like I said, I wasn't going to do.
This is our first stream, folks. We got to get things out.
Yeah.
That's right. We're trying it, but yeah. So we got DeAndre Swift. Coming over from the Eagles. We have a Swift. That means we automatically get Taylor.
We're ready for it.
Yep, ready for it.
Take that, then, Chiefs.
Take that, yeah. And then I'll give $5 to whoever wants to try to say this.
No.
No one? Great.
Nah, great. I'm good.
And then we got our center. We got a center, boys. How about it?
An actual center.
Yeah, so
step up from where they were last
season. So there's a couple other... Yeah, there's a couple other ones that they got, but those are the three that are on the website now. So yeah, they did a little bit. This is the one that I would like to talk about, because not only do we get this guy.
That was a fun one.
We get his wife. Mm-hmm. Simone Biles is part of the Chicago Bears now. And I think we have a civic duty to take care of to make sure that she is welcomed on the north side of Chicago as a Cubs fan and doesn't go down south.
Oh, 100%.
After she eats her pizza... and her hot dogs, as she made that very clear.
Yeah.
Embracing Chicago already. It's great.
Yeah. Did you see? She was like, I don't have to go through a layover to see my husband play football anymore.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
He already loves Chicago. It's great.
It is great.
Oh, great place.
And it's a nice signing. You know, you get a legitimate tight end. And I think that when you look at this crop of signings, do I kind of wish they did a bit more on the defensive front? Frankly, yeah. But, you know, I think Swift is a nice pickup. Good shifty running back. He's not really a power guy. He's more the shifty guy. I think that he's also a dual threat. He's good to throw to as well. So you have a nice balance there. I think him being kind of your top running back, like, listen, you don't have a core that's going to be like, wow, blow you out of the water. But if they can run block again, because they run blocked fairly well last year, and you add Swift, who's shiftier, you can use him as a target. Because I like Khalil Herbert, but you saw last year after that injury, it took him a bit of time to get that extra step just wasn't there.
Yeah. It was
slow. Yeah. And then Roschon Johnson, I think he's a third back. I think that's where we are.
I think so.
I think he's comfortable with that too.
I think so too. There's nothing wrong with that. I just don't think we can elevate him to, you know, higher expectations than we need to. Is DeAndre Swift going to be the number one running back in the NFL? No, but if he has a season
gonna,
like he had last year,
he's going to give you, he's going to give you 7 or 8 yards when he was only supposed to get 2 every now and then, you know, like he's big and bulky, but he's fast. So he's very swift on his feet.
And you know what? I never understand. Bears fans are always talking about the Bears spending money as if it's their money to spend. So when the Swift contract broke, everyone was like, oh my God, that's too much money for a running back.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's Chicago. It's like, why don't you spend any money? And then why are you spending all this money?
Yeah, the Bears had the cap space to make that type of deal. And let's say we are moving forward in the season with Justin Fields as our starting quarterback. The biggest piece of that is that we wanted to add playmakers to support Justin Fields. They did that with the very first signing they did. So to be hypocritical in the sense that, hey, let's build a team like the Eagles. Let's build a team like the 49ers. We literally grabbed the Eagles running back and people were like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Well,
we just can't have nice things.
To piggyback off that, the running back market went crazy this year. And, you know, I've always been kind of the, hey, don't pay a running back, but you gave him 3 years, and the money you gave him compared to what the other running backs are getting paid, like you look at the actual market. I mean, look at how crazy this running back market went. It makes the Swift deal look pretty solid. You know, you look at what Saquon Barkley got. You look at, you know, Joe Mixon. There was the deal with Joe Mixon. And then among others, you know, Green Bay, they signed a running back. And then the Packers let go of Aaron Jones, who went to the Vikings. So there was a lot of movement with running backs. And I think the Swift deal is pretty reasonable. And the other thing, too, is that I was talking with some coworkers at work when the deal went down. You know, when I'm looking at DeAndre Swift, I'm thinking, oh, okay, he's like, what, 27, 28? He's only 25. It feels like
he's 25.
Yeah, it feels like he should be a lot older. It feels like he's been in the league forever, but he's only 25. So you're pretty much locking him up for the rest of his prime years in the NFL.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look who his quarterback's going to be.
Yeah.
All right. The Brett Ripon era has begun.
Yeah, every team needs, especially a team that brings in an offensive coordinator. You need that coach in practice. I'm sure that's just what Brett Ripon.
Well, he's going to be the backup for Tyson Bagent, so
QB3.
Of course,
he's the new Nathan Peterman, because Nathan Peterman went to the Saints.
Signed with the Saints.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The tank commander is gone. Saints.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin Byard out of Philadelphia, got him. The defense, you extend Jalen Johnson, which, by the way, last week I said Jalen Johnson would get extended. Check.
There you go.
And then I said, and then I said Justin Fields would get traded, and we're still working on that. But I said Jalen Johnson, so there you go.
One out of two ain't bad.
Yeah. One out of two ain't bad. I think that's what Meatloaf said. All right, so now we've talked about the Bears on the field. Let's talk about where they're going to be playing on the field. This stadium stuff is crazy, man. This is just, it's getting out of control because now the Sox are involved, which we'll talk about the Sox side of things when we get to the Sox, but let's stick to the Bears. Excuse me. Let's stick to the Bears for a minute. So I'll just go ahead and give my opinion right now. They're going to Arlington. That's going to happen. Yeah. They're going to Arlington. But now they say that their focus is staying in the city, building a new stadium next to where Soldier Field is now, tearing that down, but keeping the colonnades. I don't know where they're going to get all this parking and stuff. And neither do the people that say that they're looking to do this, because they had one guy on the radio this week and they asked him questions. He was like, so where are you going to put the parking? And he was like, yep, it's going to be great. Okay, but where are you going to, like, where are people going to park? Like, what's traffic going to be like? Oh, it's going to be awesome.
Literally the same things with the Sox and the 78. Literally that same issue.
Yeah. 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 So I think
honestly, it felt like Kevin Warren just kind of did a solid for Brandon Johnson without really telling, you know, the front of the park in the city, or without telling Arlington Heights.
Yeah.
And it was just like, let's go ahead and leak this and then have the announcement, when really it was nothing but
facade,
because
it's like when your parents changed. Took you to the grocery store and they were like, if you're good, like, I'll get you something, knowing that they're never going to get you anything.
Right.
Well, and the timing too was very interesting, because my immediate reaction the morning was, oh, they fumbled Arlington Heights, blah, blah, blah. And listen, they might still end up not getting a deal and they might end up doing this. I really don't know for sure, but it did make you think after a while, the timing of this leak, like going into the new week, it wasn't some Friday afternoon news dump. It was early in the morning at the very beginning of the week, when everybody would be waking up from their beds and seeing this, just like I did. So that does, you know, make you raise a few eyebrows. And I think that Arlington Heights wants it, as in the government and the officials. I don't know about the citizens so much, but and I think the Bears still want to go to Arlington Heights, but they did not expect the property taxes to be quite as high as they end up being. So we'll see how this goes. I mean, it was never going to be easy, but I really thought when they purchased this land, which was what? It was 2021. Matt Nagy was still the head coach when they bought that Arlington Heights land. I would have thought by now we would know exactly what's going on, and we'd even start to see the groundbreaking ceremony by now. But that's not going to happen. But the Bears have the lease through Soldier Field to, like, what, 2033? So it's not like the lease is up in 2 years.
Yeah.
Right. They still got some time.
I don't know.
And I will say, actually, one thing I think the announcement did serve is the Bears want nothing to do with the White Sox plan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The Bears, yeah, the Bears announcement made that clear, saying that it was just their plan. But the fact that they also added in that they are going to invest $2 billion is just a complete push away from whatever it is the White Sox are trying to do, because the Bears do not want to be associated with that mess right now.
Yeah, and I will say Pritzker said that, like, great, you're going to put up $2 billion, but it's going to take way more than $2 billion for what you're trying to do. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a mess, man. Like, it's just only the, like, I, once they bought the land in Arlington, it should have been done. Like, we're going to Arlington. Sorry. Like, we have all this blank space out here where we can do whatever we want to it. And yes, sales tax is going to stink, or the property tax is going to stink, but look at all the revenue we're about to make.
Well, that's also sort of the problem, is we can't forget that who orchestrated the Arlington Heights plan at first. That was Ted Phillips. And Ted Phillips is known to not maybe go through the best vetting processes. So I have no doubt that he, to your point, Tommy, saw the land, saw the opportunity, and was like, yeah, this is going to be great. It's going to, I'm going to snap my fingers and we're going to do this. So that's why he announced the deal. And then Kevin Warren comes in and he's like, wait a minute. We don't know.
We don't have a plan
in property tax.
No, yeah. It's what we hired you for. And,
right.
It's the Spider-Man meme right. of like everybody pointing at each other.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, Ted saw that like a massive chocolate cake. So he dove for it and got it. And then it's like, okay, Warren take care of the rest. And he's like, well, okay. I mean, because let's be real, that's why they hired Kevin Warren first and foremost, was figure this part out, especially since he was the one that built the Vikings stadium, because he was the COO, I believe, of the Vikings when they built that stadium. Yeah. So that was his doing there. So, you know, that's what they're trying to do here. And I'm sure building in the Twin Cities is easier than building in Chicagoland. I really don't know, but that's just kind of my guess. My other question, too, is if they think that they are going to build on the lakefront by there, so you're going to build a stadium right next to the old one, you know, how are you going to do that? I would assume you're going to build it and then move as soon as it's done. You're not going to build it on the same spot. You're going to keep the colonnades. Cause if you did that, you would have to play somewhere else. And that just, I don't know. Right. Even if you built right next to it, my other co-host on Swirsky Sports jokingly said the other day, oh, you should build it where Migs Field was. Like, yeah, let's have our new stadium on an island. That's a great idea.
Somebody said that they should just put it on the lake. Just build a platform on the lake and just have the Bears play out there.
Like a giant like oil drilling like rig in the middle of the ocean.
Except it's a football stadium. Everybody's got a ferry over. So you park like where Megfield was and then you ferry to the...
The ferries are piloted by like Ed Obradovich and Richard Dent.
Yep.
All right, get on the bus. Everyone shut up. That would be
this is already so Bears, just the mess that it is.
You
want to talk about something happy?
Yes.
Yes.
The Chicago Cubs. I'm happy.
Looking good.
I'm happy. You know, we have to deal with Jameson Taillon. Sorry.
Who's Italian?
I have an inside joke with a buddy I text with, where we call him James Italian. Jameson Taillon, anyways. So he's hurt. Probably out for a month or so is the last thing I saw.
That's what it sounds like. It looks like a month.
I wrote a blog this week about how everybody can just stop, because they're not going to go pay Jordan Montgomery. They're not going to pay Blake Snell. They might go pay Michael Lorenzen. Like, here's like $9-10 million to
Lorenzen's
come in.
Lorenzen's going to the White Sox.
I think that more so now than I did when I wrote the blog, but... they're not going to pay, because they're going to be fine with Drew Smiley, Hayden Wesneski, Javier Assad, all these guys. Like, they're just going to take turns and turn until Taillon is back. If they were the Yankees and they wanted to like shove it down people's throat, they would go do this. But They don't want to be a big market.
Because even the Yankees aren't doing it. If you take a look at like what,
well, they should. Yeah, they're
all the concern is with Gerrit Cole, and then Marcus Stroman came out today and was like, "Nope, I'm not the opening day starter." It doesn't seem like it's gonna be Carlos Rodon, and yet you have Blake Snell, you have Jordan Montgomery out there, and the Yankees still aren't, you know, meeting the asking price.
Wouldn't it be a dream if they just got a one-year deal with the Cubs, Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell?
It would be awesome. It would be great, but they're not going to do it.
I know.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a 0% chance.
0.1.
I will say 0.1, especially for Montgomery. I do think the closer we get to the season, even if we get into the season, I think that's where the Cubs might circle back around and be like, hey, we're now at the start of the regular season. Let's get you in here for one season. Let's have you ramp up for a month, then have you be that top of the rotation pitcher.
But by the time Montgomery or Snell is ready, Tyone's probably back.
Well, here's the thing. Even with Tyone being back, the Cubs have a very bad postseason rotation. So
I would
Montgomery is needed regardless of the health of Jameson Taillon. But I will say, to your overall point of the Cubs liking their pitching depth, I think that's why you guys didn't see the Cubs go after Dylan Cease, because that would have required the Cubs to give up a Ben Brown. That would have required the Cubs to give up a Jordan Wicks. And the Cubs don't want to do that right now.
And I'm okay with that.
They look.
Yeah, right. Same. Yeah.
I wrote about that for Cubby Script. I am perfectly fine with the Cubs sitting this one out, because if you look at what the Cubs need, like I was mentioning, they need that mercenary at the top of the rotation for one season. But in terms of the five-year outlook of their rotation, it looks pretty strong with Cade Horton, with Brent Brown, with Jordan.
That's Wicks. A good point. So, that's a good point. This is a great question on YouTube. How late is too late for those guys? It's never too late, but it's too late now to be ready for opening day, I would assume.
Yeah, if we're talking about opening day, it's already too late, because usually a pitcher needs
about a month,
probably a month. So, say either one of them comes into camp within the next week, we're probably looking at them making their season debut by the end of April, if not that first week in May.
Yeah, that's what I would think too. I would love for them to do it. Would love for them to say, you know what, Jordan Montgomery.
Yeah, more so Montgomery. Yeah.
Because I'm with you guys. That's what I want. And I get the science behind doing that too, with the 1 year deal of like, look, we need you for a year, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. They're not going to do it. There's a better chance of another guy who is a free agent next year, who we might trade for this year to come to Chicago, than it is for us signing Jordan Montgomery. I'm talking about Pete Alonso.
Oh, I thought you were talking about a pitcher.
I'm going to say there's a better chance of the Cubs ending up with Pete Alonso than signing Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell. And I have reasoning, but I'm telling you that's how low the chances are of them getting Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell.
That makes sense. No. I mean, that's fair. I honestly, I wouldn't put either past 5%.
Right, yeah. Pete Alonso, the percentage is not high, but there is a better statistical percentage that they would do that than sign Jordan Montgomery.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah.
I did. Yeah, I wrote a blog today just about Pete Alonso, just to kind of keep it going a little bit, you know. But if you think about it, Michael Busch is the first baseman now. Like that is the path that he has been set forth. Go for it. You are the first baseman.
Yeah.
Let's say Cody Bellinger has a great year and thinks he can go get more than $30 million somewhere else. Pete Crow Armstrong's coming up. He takes center field. We still have problems at third base. Michael Busch slides over to third. Pete Alonso at first.
But
this is like less than 5% chance of happening.
We're thinking ahead, way ahead here.
Yeah. I know. I will say, I do love the start of the regular season, because that's normally when it gets floated out there.
Oh, yeah.
Cubs are going to be in on like a big name free agent.
Right.
In the
offseason. And then we lose 12 in a row and sell everybody.
Yeah. Well, it's not even that. We talk about it all throughout the season about like, oh, keep an eye on Alonso this winter. the winter comes around.
See, look what I've done.
The Cubs then.
Look what I've done.
Yeah.
I'm talking about signing him. I'm not talking about trading for him. But if you're going to trade.
Yeah. I mean, I know the Mets in previous conversations this offseason wanted Christopher Morel. The Cubs balked at that because the Cubs really do value Morel.
They're very high on him. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if the Cubs were to ever be in a position where they were going to trade Morel, it wouldn't be for a rental bet in Alonso.
Right.
Well, yeah, and they would need a.
Because he is, again, Pete Alonso is a free agent at the end of this year. So
and they would need a solidified third, solution at third, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Michael Bush wouldn't be a solidified option there.
No, God,
you know,
goodness.
You know who is? No, you know who might be one day? You have to Shaw it. Matt Shaw.
I think that's a third baseman by September.
Which I do feel fairly confident in. It's just right now we can't say anything for sure, obviously.
But right, yeah. And to go back to the question, in terms of like what prospects are have to be included into the deal, if you look at the Mets, they need pitching.
They need pitching so bad.
Yes.
It starts with one of
Ben Brown,
Rick Horton, or Ben Brown. And again, I think that's where the Cubs will once again say no.
Right.
Because they like the five-year outlook of their pitching staff, and they don't want to give up those prospects.
Again, this is all less than 5% chance of happening.
But it's fun. But it's like fun. I said, this is what we do at the start of each season. We pinpoint the free agent to be like, that's a future Cub, and then the winter happens, and then it doesn't.
Yeah. One of you talked about this on Twitter the other day, and it was a thought that I had in my head too, but I never like expressed it, so we can talk about it here. Ian Happ should kind of be the leadoff man and not Nico Horner, because Nico Horner is up there trying to get contact where Ian Happ will take his walks.
Right. Yeah, he gets on base, and I think that Nico Horner's a good guy to have second because he can put the ball in play and move the runner along. Obviously, you want to avoid double plays. He doesn't slug much, but if Ian Happ gets on and then Nico Horner shoots the ball the other way, then you're in business right there. So I do kind of agree with that. Obviously, Ian Happ is injured right now. Hopefully, he'll be ready for opening day, but that's kind of how I would approach it right now. And I do feel like whatever decision Craig Counsell moves, there'll be good justification behind it. There'll be good reasoning behind it. Because we're still in that position where we haven't had a traditional leadoff man since Dexter Fowler.
Right.
Crazy to think about.
Yeah. I think Ian Happ would be great at first, at batting first, but you know who my prospect is for batting second? And he did it today. Seiya Suzuki. He can give you the slug of the second hole, of the two hole, you know?
A la Ryan Sandberg.
Yeah. I saw you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw your tweet. I was a big fan of that. And honestly, if it's a Seiya Suzuki we get from the second half of last season, you put him in the number two hole. In terms of Nico, I wouldn't hate it if he was actually in the sixth hole, because then you're guaranteed of having someone that can make contact in the middle of your lineup. Say Bellegro gets on in the cleanup spot. Say you have either Morel or Swanson at fifth. You have another run creating opportunity with Horner at batting six.
Yeah, so that was the lineup that I put out today. I did Happ, Suzuki, Horner, Bellinger, Swanson, Morel, Bush, Wisdom, Gomes. And that, by the way, Morel, DH, Wisdom, third base.
Yeah, I'd put a run producer at third, personally. I'd put Bellinger third, or maybe Morel. I'd probably Bellinger more than anybody. I get what you're going with this, because you could say, hey, if happens Suzuki get on, Horner can make contact, get the runner in. I do kind of like, though, the idea of Horner being down a little bit, because he's not a power guy. He's not going to hit the ball out of the ballpark nearly as often. But Happ Suzuki 1 and 2, I think that's very intriguing. And I would like to say this too. Suzuki has had a really nice spring.
He's had a lovely spring. Yeah. He's had a great spring.
Yeah, it's been fun. The only thing.
The only thing about this lineup, though, with Happ, Suzuki up top, and then Horner, like Horner is your best bet for stealing bases of those top three.
Right.
So the base stealing game would be a little low, but
how valuable is that?
Exactly. That was my next point. I was going to say, but if Happ's getting on and say I was bringing him in anyways, like who cares?
Right. Yeah, I don't think it's the 1970s anymore. I'm not saying having a base sealer is bad because, you know, late in the postseason, in a big spot, you know, pinch running in a must-win situation is important. But like in a regular season starting lineup, I just don't think it has the same value as it had back then. There's another player I want to bring up here. I wrote about him for Cubby's Crib last night. You guys, Jordan, I know you've seen this. Garrett Cooper, I don't think we talk enough about him. Came here as a non-roster invitee. He's the right-handed counter to Michael Bush's lefty. I think you could platoon a bit at first base. Garrett Cooper can hit, and he's a seven-year veteran. He's not much of a power guy, but he can hit. He's got a career average of .268 and a career on base of .337. 337 is well above average in terms of on base.
Oh, yeah.
I think the dude can hit, and he can hit both sides of the plate, too. Like, he doesn't just hit lefties, he hits righties, too. Yeah. He's had a nice spring, he's had some good swings. I thought that was kind of a sneaky good move by the Cubs, and I would advocate for him being part of the roster right now. I really would.
Excuse me. Yeah, definitely part of the roster. I would definitely have him on the 26-man roster. He's having a great spring, too. He crushed that opposite field home run the other day. Did you see that one? Oh, that
was beautiful. Yeah, that was beautiful. Good sound. Great swing. Good swing. Yeah. And opposite field, it went way out. It wasn't cheap, scrape the wall. Yeah, it was well. I think it was over the bullpen. So that was hit really hard. Very impressive swings. He hit another home run yesterday. I like the fact that he's on this non-roster squad because maybe he'll be added to the 40-man.
Right, yeah.
And honestly, I think we said it on a previous pod. Cooper has, like, that fit of, like, a Craig Council player that can just come in, gives you 15 and 20 home runs a season. And, Alex, one thing that I was actually thinking about when I was, like, reviewing your article, I've heard nothing concrete, but the Cubs as an organization are leaning towards being out on Matt Mervis than they are him being any part of their plan. It sounds like when he last went to Iowa, the Cubs wanted him to work on an adjustment. Mervis wasn't really working on the adjustment to the point where they liked, and the Cubs just have some long-term concern there. So,
we don't have a spot for him either. Like
right now, we really don't know.
Yeah, right now we don't. So I think when Cooper came in, he automatically leapfrogged Mervis in terms of the first base options. And then, like I said, we can't just keep having guys like Miles Mastrobrony come in and pinch hit spots, hoping they make contact.
Yeah.
You want Garrett Cooper on your bench, someone that you know that if you're down one, you pinch hit him in the ninth. There's a pretty decent chance he could do some damage. I think he has a great chance of being.
Well, it's nice too having a guy like Garrett Cooper like that. But then you also have Patrick Wisdom too, and they're kind of the same person. I'd give the favor to a little bit to Garrett Cooper, but they're about the same person.
Well, Cooper is a much better
hitter. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like they you give the lean to Cooper, but overall,
honestly, That's really the only issue I had with your lineup. I don't want Patrick Wisdom.
Oh, I don't either.
A starting lineup. Against lefties, for sure. Mm-hmm. But as an everyday player, I think we saw last year when Wisdom was used as an everyday player, his numbers dove off a cliff after the first month of the season. And I think if we keep him in that spot to where he's only playing first base or he's only DHing against lefties, I think we're seeing he can be a very good player in that defined role without the pressure of being an everyday
player. He shouldn't be in there every day, no. You put him in the right situation. His raw power is insane. Like, in terms of raw power, I think Schwarber is one of the only people that rival him. I mean, I'm not saying that Patrick Wisdom is better than in prime Chris Bryant or Anthony Rizzo or anything like that. I'm just talking about raw power, just the ability to hit the ball 1,000 feet.
Wisdom his walk off the other night,
that was a tank, absolute tank.
Bomb.
And when he connects, it's such a beautiful sight to see because. Yeah, like you said, the ball just travels. And fun fact, MLB The Show 24 coming out tomorrow for pre-release, Patrick Wisdom, a 99 power rating against left-handed
players. Yeah, well, yep. Imagine if Patrick Wisdom stepped up against the soft-tossing lefty that he could take deep with a metal bat, a traditional metal bat.
Oh.
Somebody would die.
Yeah.
It would still be traveling.
There would be a casualty.
He would hit
Patrick Wisdom. Patrick Wisdom is really leaning into his role as just a guy who cranks on lefties a little bit, you know?
Yeah. All yeah. Right.
So
do what you're good at.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't want him on the, I don't want him in the lineup either. I'm just trying to put myself in the shoes of the manager of the Chicago Cubs and what they're going to do.
For sure.
So,
well, you would have 9 David Bodies.
I would love Dave Bodie to be on the roster. I'm not going to lie. All right. Let's talk Sox. Is this a fleecing?
I mean, a fleecing? No.
Because the White Sox Twitter really wants it to be a fleecing.
It wasn't. It was a good trade. I mean, it was a trade they had to do, I think. And actually, I took issue. I was listening to the Score today. It was characterized as the White Sox getting lottery tickets. That's not what happened. Lottery tickets was what the Cubs got back for Yu Darvish. This is actual, you have 3 players within the Padres top 10. You have a top 100 MLB prospect in terms of the package you got. It's not the best package you probably could have got for Cease. Honestly, I think that time passed at the start of this season. But if you look at where the White Sox were heading into last season, they weren't going to trade Cease. But it's a move they had to do. He was losing value the more he pitched for them. I don't hate it. I don't really love it. But I'm willing to see it out.
They had to do something. They had to move him.
Yeah.
Like, they had no choice.
Yeah.
My question is, what are the Padres doing? What are the Padres doing?
No idea.
Yeah. Like,
straight away, Juan Soto, yeah. Blake Snell gone, get Dylan Cease. Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
And that's
are you playing to win thought, or are you not? Like,
yeah. And, you know, the Padres are already in an uphill climb in the NLS trying to catch up to the Diamondbacks, definitely trying to catch up to the Dodgers. Like you said, they traded Juan Soto. It kind of seemed like they were going to take a step back. They still got massive contracts on that roster. But it just seems like with this deal, they're trying to salvage one more season out of a roster that we've seen doesn't play well together. So I don't think there's going to be any different result, even with Cease being added. Because if you look at what Cease was last year, yeah, he was an ace, but he was also an ace that needed work. So we'll see. I just don't see the Padres really stepping up to get on the same level as the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I don't know how much this moves the needle. I think them getting another starter, it adds another legit starter in your rotation. I don't think an ace type. I mean, Cease has ace type stuff, and he had a great year in 2022. Oh, yeah. But we've seen other years where the results have been okay. You know, the problem is he doesn't go deep into games, and there, you know, there's some command issues. The pitch count is very high. It's like they got rid of Blake Snell to get Blake Snell 2.0 back, which, you know, and I can understand the Padres saying, hey, we don't want to re-sign him because we don't want to pay him a bunch of money. But you're also paying in prospect capital too, although they didn't give up any of their top 3, but they still gave up, you know, 3 of their top 10. One is in the top 100, Thorpe, who I'm intrigued for the Sox. I think that's a very interesting piece. I think if you are going to talk in terms of lottery tickets, I think Zavala, he's only like, what, 18? He's got a lot of talent. I think he's got promise, but any 18-year-old is pretty much a lottery ticket at this point, where Thorpe, you know, he's more polished. He's got experience under him. And I think that he's a very intriguing piece here that other teams do value. So I think the Sox did okay on this trade. Heck, I'd say they did pretty good. That's where I would say we won't truly know until, you know, 25-26, as in 2025-2026. But I think in terms of return, I think it's pretty good for the Sox. Like you guys said, they had to make a move. They weren't going to ever pay Dylan Cease because you know, Jerry Reinsdorf, we don't like paid pitchers. Shohei Ohtani, we're not going to be on Shohei Ohtani. I remember when I saw Jackie Robinson, David Eckstein's my favorite player. You know, so you knew they weren't going to do that. But, and the thing is, if you kept Dylan Cease for 2 years, so you're going to have Dylan Cease on a 90 plus loss team. Not going to do much for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now the question is, what are they going to do now? Because
tank.
I don't. Well, yes, they're going to tank, but they also have a couple really good players on their roster still.
Yeah, I mean,
do you try to build around Luis Robert?
Oh well, honestly, they were talking Luis today on the radio that maybe they should just trade him and just start completely over.
Sure,
they should, because Luis Robert is just going to be the next Tim Anderson for the White Sox. Great player when they were bad, but then once the White Sox turned good, we kind of saw the regression in TA. I don't think we're going to see that regression in Luis Robert. I think Luis Robert is a perennial MVP candidate.
If he's healthy.
Trade him now.
Yeah,
if he's healthy. Yeah,
ESPN has him ranked number 23 on the big board of MLB players.
You know what I could see happening, though, with the White Sox this year? I could absolutely see Eloy Jimenez just having the year of his life.
I hope so.
That'd be fine. You know? Yeah, I've always liked Eloy.
I can't hate him.
The Cease trade actually had me revisit that 2017 trade, which, by the way,
everybody lost.
Jose Quintana. Yeah. Well, by the way, Jose Quintana, the Mets opening day starting pitcher this season. Yeah. So
tell me Pete Alonso isn't going to be available at the deadline. Tell me.
Yeah, that is a trade that keeps on giving. But yeah, I hope Eloy finally clicks for him this season, because he's a fun player. He's good in the clubhouse, so it'd be really good to see him kind of reach that.
Change his stance a little bit too, and he's really raking in spring training. So, you wonder how's he going to do? How's Mankata going to do? Because he's in a contract year. He's had a good spring training. Is Andrew Vaughn going to take that next step? I mean, you got to watch something this year if you're a Sox fan. You got to be keeping your eye on something. Obviously, a lot of emphasis will be on some of the prospects you've acquired since last year's deadline, because you know you acquired guys for Lucas Giolito as well when you traded him away. You traded away the reliever. What's his name? Joe Kelly. So you have those guys, you got the guys you just got. So there'll be a lot of farm watching. And then, you know, on the big league club, you'll see how Luis Robert does. You'll see how Eloy does. You'll see how Yoan Moncada does. You'll see how Andrew Vaughn does. Because past that, now you have Michael Kopech going to the bullpen. I don't know if you guys saw that, but that's official.
I did see that.
Yeah. Is Garrett Crochet going to be a starter? There's another question that you might have. So it's not going to be necessarily pretty for the Sox, but you got to watch what you can. And there are some storylines to follow here.
Yeah. So just to put it out there for Luis Robert, he is under contract through 2027. He gets paid $12.5 million this year, $15 million next year, and then $20 million in 2026 and 2027. So
Rick Hahn gave him that sweet buyout contract before he made the big leagues.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. It's always amazing when I look at back at what Hahn did, because he was able to pinpoint what went wrong with the Cubs rebuild and the fact that the Cubs weren't able to get extensions done early with any of their core. But then he also failed at what the Cubs did right in their rebuild, is when their prospects reached a major level, the Cubs gave them that superstar free agent signing that the White Sox never did. I'm very curious to see what Getz is going to do. And to be honest with you, for as much jokes as we have at Getz's expense for bringing in former Royals, I actually don't hate what he's done so far.
I don't either.
I'm curious to see how it plays out. But
yeah, it hasn't been bad.
I think he might be on the right track.
Well, I think that at the very least, he's on the right track in terms of philosophy. He seems to be favoring defense and pitching, which I think was seriously lacking. Fundamentals was seriously lacking. Even if the guys he picks up for the major league roster are just kind of fill-ins this year, you see the philosophy is going, okay, Nicky Lopez, good defender. Paul DeJong, historically good defender. I don't really know how much Martin Maldonado has left in the tank, but over his career, you know, veteran catcher. He's been a very plus defender. Chicago Cub legend, yes. He played for like five yeah. games on the north side in 2019. But I think the philosophy is there. And yeah, you know, I think it's easy to jump on Getz. Obviously, you look at the sins of the past where the prospects didn't develop when he was part of the farm director, but I'm going to give him a chance here. I am going to give him a chance because I think he's got an interesting philosophy here. And also keeping in mind that Jerry has him in his clutches. So there are things that are just out of his control that were out of control of Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams. Because Jordan, you just talked about how they didn't sign big free agents. Well, guess what? Who makes the budget? That's Jerry. And who's the one that hired his old drunk buddy? That was Jerry. To manage the team.
That was Jerry.
Also, just to put it out there too, Eloy, $13 million this year, $16.5 million next year, $18.5 million in 2026, then free agent in 2027. So if he has a big year, like if he has a big start this year and then going into 2025, like really is up there to what we expected him to be, it's another guy, you know? So
or not that
honestly, my prediction is Eloy is going to be the biggest bet available at the trade deadline this summer.
Yeah, and I mean, I hate it for the White Sox because I've said a bajillion times in the last like 3 months, I feel like, that I like if I had my preference, I would love to have two really good baseball teams in the city of Chicago.
Rarely works that way. Same. Rarely but ever lines up that way.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, like they got to tear it down and start over. Like the Cubs had to do it.
They had to. Yeah.
They have to. They're gonna have to do it too. So Eloy and Luis are the best that they have, and especially if Luis is going to be on MVP level like he was last year. You gotta bank on that somewhere, you know, for the future. So
for sure. And the one thing I will say about Chris Getz is we're talking about them tearing it down, right? Like this is we see it happening. What's amazing is that they still don't they're not coming out and telling you what we all know. It's like they don't want to use the rebuild word. They're like, well, you know, we feel good about these players to make us better now. It's like dude. Let's be real here. You're tearing it down. Yeah. It's a rebuild. You can say it. Fans would like you better if you are full front and honest than trying to
BS
them.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And going back to when the Cubs broke it down in 2021, one of those guys that left was Javi Baez. Have you seen what he's doing this spring? Buddy.
My buddies and I were talking about it in a group text.
Woo.
It's just incredible how quick that fall off was. I was watching a clip of a swing where it was just a dribble back to the pitcher, and his mechanics are so out of whack. You talk about a player that needed to be in a specific spot. I think we're seeing it with Javi. I think he needed to be with the Cubs. He needed to be with Wrigley because that's where the magic happened. And we saw it briefly for the Mets. We haven't seen it with the Tigers, and I don't think we will. I think this is just who he is.
I think, personally, everybody knew that he was not going to age well. He was going to peak early with the way he plays, the free swinging, the high energy, and all the magic El Mago stuff. It just wasn't going to age well. He was going to have that peak when he was young, and then it was going to decline, and that's exactly what we're seeing. And when you see him swing now, sometimes he looks like one of those car lot, like big, like blow up guy, that guys that do that. Like it almost looks like that. And it's just, this isn't like, it's just spring training. He looks like he's just ramping up, whatever results don't matter. Like it looks off.
It's, I will say,
and it has for a while.
Yeah, there were a lot of things that were wrong with COVID in 2020. One thing that kind of gets forgotten is the Cubs were only a couple of days away from finalizing a contract extension with Baez before things shut down due to the pandemic. And in the alternate universe where that extension gets done, I would hate to be there.
Sorry.
We have our first commercial.
Oh, you're good. I know, ad break.
Wish. No free ads. Whoever thought COVID would be a miracle, but here we are. his fall off has been just remarkable. And if you think about all the guys that got traded there, like Chris Bryant, it pains me to say, but
That's
probably
really
good.
Bad.
We didn't. Yeah, that whole thing is just bad. Like, I don't decided. Like. Yeah. I will spend time on it because I feel like it should have been. It could have been better. It should have been better, and it's no fault of his.
Right,
and it stinks. But
those nagging injuries really piled up too. Really,
and
piled
you
up.
Right. And he just. I don't know. You just wonder, like, would it be different if he didn't have so much pressure on him? Like, I got to be this guy. Right. The injuries happen. And it really, remember, it was in Colorado, ironically enough, when he got hit in the head. Mm-hmm. What was that in
2018?
He got hit in the head in Colorado.
Yep.
And then it was just kind of weird for a while, you know?
Yep.
And what people's perspective of him, it just really upsets me because I love Chris Bryant and he's such a good guy and he's such a good baseball player. Oh, yeah. If you just let him play baseball and get out and like, just let him play baseball, right. You know, and it's just,
it is sad that, cause I don't think we're ever going to see the version of Chris Bryant that we saw when he was a college player of the year, the rookie of the year,
the MVP,
and then the MVP. Honestly, it's funny that Tommy mentioned about like getting, you know, blue in the face defending Chris Bryant, because that's how I was in 2017 when everyone was like, oh, Chris Bryant, he's having a bad season. When statistically, 2017 was better than his MVP season.
It's like, what more do you want from him?
The homer horn is high, but the slash line was.
Yeah. And that's you put him on a billboard and say he's the second coming and you expect a World Series immediately. He gives it to you. Then you get upset because he gets hit in the head and he struggles for a little while. Like, just shut up. Let him.
And that's the thing. He was so talented that like when he played, it looked effortless because that's how good he was.
Exactly. And,
yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
it's
yeah. I still get blue in the face over it because I will fight for Chris Bryant until I die. But anyway,
it's just too bad. It's too bad that even when he gets back on the field, he has to go immediately off because there's another injury. It's just
right.
And it's not me saying that I wish this version was still on the Cubs. I'll always love Chris Bryant, but you know.
But the thing is, if he stayed with the Cubs, the pressure was right there the whole time. And and so if he would have been miserable here, at least in Colorado, he's close to his family in Vegas.
Like, there's really,
he's at a ballpark where he can hit a home run at will. Like if he gets everybody off his back, like just let him play baseball. Yeah,
there's really only two players I wish stayed with the Cubs. One's in hindsight because one's Kyle Schwarber, but again, when the Cubs made the decision to non-tender Schwarber, they made the right decision for the type of player that Schwarber was at that
time. He was struggling big time that year.
His offense was broken. He fixed his offense to the point where he's the best power hitter in the game. Sure, you have Aaron Judge in New York. No, it's Kyle Schwarber. So Schwarber's one. The other one was Yu Darvish because that was a trade that was made because of financial reasons. The Cubs got lucky that Owen Casey emerged from that package as a blue chip prospect. And here's what's so funny about that trade. When we were talking about Dylan Cease, I pulled up like stories of that Yu Darvish trade. Owen Casey wasn't even mentioned in most articles as one of the players that the Cubs got.
And player to be named later.
And now he's the one that's kind of the prized prospect.
Well, I remember when they got that trade done, the guy that I was kind of focused on was Reginald Preciado. I thought he was going to be kind of the blue chipper, but he's just completely fallen off a cliff, and you barely hear about him at this point. But Owen Casey's turned out to be good. And that was the pure salary dump. And I'm with you, Jordan. I do wish that Yu Darvish was still part of this rotation. And you said it perfectly with Kyle Schwarber. Hindsight, I would love to have those 40 home runs as a DH right now, but we also have to remember that at the time, he was really struggling in 2020. Right. Like Robbie Gould when he got cut from the Bears, he needed that kick in the pants. He openly admitted it. They both openly admitted when Chicago cut them, hey, I needed a wake-up call. this was my wake-up call.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when they got Doc Peterson, that seemed like good value as a replacement.
Yeah, and look what Jock Peterson turned into. Like, he turned into a... Who do we get for Jock Peterson? Oh, Jesse Chavez and...
No, we got... wasn't it Bryce Ball?
Yeah, it was Bryce. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No. All right, never mind.
We didn't get... I was going to say that that's...
So we gave... Yeah, we gave Atlanta a world... we gave Atlanta a world championship. So I'm going to claim Atlanta's world championship.
You do that.
Yeah, and, you know, another thing, too, with, like, Schwarber and KB and all these guys... It was like a change of scenery thing too, like kick in the pants. Oh, yes, yeah. But sometimes you just need to change up the vibes a little bit, change up where you are, and figure it out. And I think that was really good for. I don't think he really felt it in Washington, but when he went to Boston, he was kind of feeling himself a little bit. And then, of course, we see what he's doing in Philly.
Yep.
Philly's atmosphere and the way that like the fans are, the team is there, like it's electric. So of course he fits in great there. So,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And then Rizzo in New York with that short porch, just waiting for him.
Like, and he's looking good this spring.
Yeah. He looks really good.
He looks really good this spring.
Looks good last so year.
Trying to stay healthy.
I was about to say, I'm so glad after the concussion scare that he's kind of back looking like himself. So looking forward to seeing him with the
Yankees this season. And I should say too, Chris Bryant here opening day. Javi Baez back for the first time in August, and then Rizzo returning for the first time in September. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
And I will be at all three. So,
there you go.
If anybody would like to go. And that is that concludes our White Sox talk.
Funny how it circled back.
I don't know how that happened. That's crazy. My bad. But. You know, it's time to talk about Alex's Blackhawks.
Yes. He was so close to that hat trick. He was so close, but it doesn't matter because he's on a tear right now. He's having multiple point game after multiple point game. And the Blackhawks, the last few games have been scoring goals at will. They lit up the Coyotes and then they lit it up again the other night. And Connor Bedard had another goal and a few assists. Against the Ducks, and I know those aren't high-powered teams by any means, but it's just nice to see them score. Bedard is making great passes, smart decisions with the puck, and his one-timer is just looking great. You heard him on the bench talking to Nick Foligno, how much he treasures Nick Foligno's leadership and mentorship, and you saw Peter Mrazek get into the scruff with the other goalie. So the last few games, you're seeing what I thought lacked from the team a little bit, and that was just some fight and passion. I just felt like the energy and the fight really dropped off with the Hawks over the past few months or whatever, but now that Bedard's going on this tear, I feel like the team is re-energized. And even if they go out and lose the next 10 games, if they go out there with that same fight and Bedard keeps doing what he's doing, that's really all you can ask for. It also is nice to get Andreas Athanasiou back out there, just to have another veteran forward out there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I've been watching the last couple games and it's been so much fun.
It has.
Connor Bedard, just when he was gone and he wasn't there for a while, it was like
no reason to watch.
Why are we watching this?
No reason. Zero. Hand up.
I did not watch.
Yeah, it changes everything. Yeah. Now it's like it's must-see television. When Bedard is on the ice, you have to watch and see what he's going to do. And
crowds into it.
Oh, it's nice to be. It's nice to have that back, you know? And it's like the Squidward GIF of future.
The future's coming.
Yeah. I'm so ready for a good Hawks team. It's been so long. Oh, it's been so long.
It's gonna be good.
Yeah. So
we get that spring again where the Cubs start off good and the Hawks are on a playoff run. I cannot wait for that year. The
2015-2016, it was great. Especially 2015, because you had the rejuvenation of the Cubs in the third cup. Like that spring was amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 2015 was awesome.
I love
2016 when the Hawks got swept as the one seed.
That was 2017.
That was 2017. It was 16.
16, they lost to the Blues in 7. 17 is when they got swept by the
Predators. That's right.
I trust you guys.
No, I got that screwed up because in 2016 when they lost to the Blues,
Heartbreak
I was in Nashville wearing my Blackhawks jersey.
Ooh,
and I thought people were going to like be really mean to me, but I told them it was my birthday and then they were really nice.
There you go.
There you go.
No. It was great.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, all right. Blackhawks must watch with Connor Bedard. The Bulls are doing that thing where they're going to try to make the playoffs and then be, and then put us in misery.
And I'm falling for it because I was watching that game last night. Yeah. I saw DeMar DeRozan do his Kobe Bryant impression. I'm like, oh, this team has sucked me back in. And I exactly what you said. They're going to probably be in the play-in. They might even do the same thing they did last year, win that first play-in game, and just completely fade out in the second
one. And the thing is, we know it's coming, but here we are. Because when Kobe White went down, I was ready to fight. I wanted a war. Yeah. I was ready to go.
Yeah.
That was such a satisfying win last night. Seeing DeMar DeRozan score the 46, and then Io DeSumo getting some big buckets. The overtime was great because the Bulls really took charge of that overtime. Even if it was a close battle in overtime, you felt like the Bulls truly had the control in that overtime. I mean, just to get there, DeMar DeRozan had to make that ridiculous shot because after Kobe was blocked and he went down, the game looked like it was just flat out over right there. Mm-hmm. And then the miracle happened. And it sounds like the Kobe White injury isn't as bad as some people feared. That's kind of nice.
No, they said he should be back on Saturday.
So there you go.
He could be back on Saturday, I should say.
It sounds like the Bulls are very lucky with that. And it does sound like he should be only out a game or two.
Yeah. It's been that weird, man. It's been weird. Yeah. You have coaches getting choked by the other team. You have the game in Indiana last night. And just how clutch this team is. When it's down to the wire, they pull those games out. It's either they pull out a clutch game or they just get their asses blown out of the building. The Mavericks just absolutely destroy them?
They waxed them. That was the one this week. I texted you guys.
The Bulls came back home.
Yeah, I texted you guys and I said, I'm consciously going to watch the Bulls game tonight. And I watched them lose by 80.
Yeah. They've been more fun on the road than at home.
Yeah, and I will just say one PSA to the Bulls, to the coaches, to the front office. Stop talking about Lonzo Ball. I mean,
we don't
need updates. We don't need, he's running. He's doing basketball sprints. We don't need any of
it's
that.
It's going to be so long.
Right.
And it's blown out of proportion by the media. They're misrepresenting what Casey Johnson says.
Exactly. He's coming back from an injury that was more so done to get repaired, to improve his way of life, not to improve anything related to his basketball career. Yep. Stop talking about him. Stop focusing about him. Because truth be told, he's probably played his last game, maybe of his career, but definitely as a boy.
Well, that's what we got to say. We got to say that to set the expectations, you know? Because the expectation should be he's probably never going to play again, and then when he comes back, it's crazy. So let's just say,
And then we could have our Brandon Roy moment when he does. But for right now, we're good.
Yeah. Yep, agreed. Yeah. Agreed.
All right, so we're all in on them making the play in, winning the first game, and then getting waxed.
It is what it is.
Oh yeah,
it is what it is.
I will say at the end, it is what it is.
Okay. I have a question for you. Let's keep talking about the Bulls here. You have one extension you can give to one player on this team. Who is it going to be?
Kobe White.
That's what I would say too.
Kobe White.
So unanimous Kobe White.
Yeah.
Okay. Not Io.
Yeah. Who else?
No.
Not Patrick.
No.
I
would give it to Kobe. I think Kobe White is the clear favorite to get the
Kobe White for sure. Yeah. Patrick Williams.
I eat
so much crow with my dad because when that draft happened and they took Patrick Williams, I'm like, oh yeah, this is the right pick for the Bulls. I know you don't see it right now, but he's going to turn into that two-way player. And now my dad just calls every time Tyrese Halliburton has like a 30-point game for the Pacers. He's like, hey, man, remember when we could have had Halliburton, but we took Patrick Williams? I'm like, I got nothing.
It was supposed to be better. It was supposed to be, that's all I can say. It was supposed to be better.
On that note.
Boys, this was fun. I think it was successful.
Yeah. This was a good one.
All right. So we'll do our normal predictions and we can still name the podcast. I named the live stream, obviously, but we can still name the podcast. So whose turn is it? Alex, is it your turn?
I think so. Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's go around with predictions and then we'll name the podcast. We'll get the hell out of here. Jordan, what is your prediction for the next week?
I definitely leaned on the Justin Fields trade the past 2 weeks.
Also, if you're watching on YouTube and or Twitter and or Facebook, if you have a prediction to give out,
comment,
please do.
I will say that Jordan Montgomery signs a 1-year deal with the Cubs.
No chance.
I hope more than ever that he does. So I could say, Tommy, I know you're happy, but suck it. Suck it.
I taught myself to suck it. Like I want it. I want it bad. I probably want it the worst of everybody.
You're going to look in the mirror and say, suck it.
I will.
That initial tweet I have, if that happens, it's going to be a straight at Tommy. I told you.
Hell yeah, John. I love this energy. Bears trade first overall. Hi, John.
That's my college buddy right there.
You go, John.
Hey, John.
Nice.
Close college buddy. We're in a group chat together, so we're always talking sports and other shenanigans. Bears trade the first overall pick. Hey, bold, but never know.
I would love it. I'm going to say Justin Fields. When's USC's pro day?
It will be a week from yesterday.
A week from yesterday. Okay.
So Wednesday.
So the 20th.
All right. Great. Yeah. So while we're taping the show,
I will live.
Bears trade Justin Fields to the New England Patriots.
Ooh, like it.
Okay. All right.
For probably like a 6th-round pick. I don't know.
Probably conditionally.
All right, Alex.
I won't go 3 in a row with Bedard. I know that's a cheap way out. As much as
that would be the hat trick.
I'm going to say DeMar DeRozan has another 40-plus point game.
Let's go.
Say 50.
No, I want it to be somewhat realistic. At least 40. It's got to be over 40, so 41 or higher.
All right, but if it's over 50, we're not talking about it.
No.
Fine.
Fine. All right, what are we naming, Alex?
We are naming this... A, we're live. A, as in like Fonz, A, we're live.
Hey, let's go.
There we go.
I want the Bedard hat trick.
If Bedard gets a hat trick next week, we're coming back and saying, suck it to Alex.
Okay. That's fine. There we go. That's great.
I hope it would be kind of funny
if it happened after I said, nah, I won't predict it this time.
That would be funny. Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. What are we naming the podcast?
A, we're live. A-Y-E, like the Fonz, A. We're live.
Hey, okay. Hey.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
You got it.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. If you watched live, thank you for the people that watched late. Next week's Wednesday. We're going back to Wednesday. Wednesday's our normal day. We're going to do Wednesday, 7 o'clock Central Time, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, everything. Come hang out with us. So thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Talk to you next week.
Peace.